Welcome to the Brain Over Binge podcast, where you learn a simple, brain-based approach to ending binge eating. I'm your host, Katherine Hansen. I'm the author of the books Brain Over Binge and the Brain Over Binge Recovery Guide. If you're new here, I want to welcome you. I believe this episode in particular will give you hope that you absolutely can put binge eating behind you, no matter how long you've struggled. Today, I'm sharing a conversation that I had with a woman who recovered after 5 decades of being caught up in the cycle of binging and purging. The conversation was very meaningful to me personally because my book was an important part of her journey, but she also used so much of her own unique knowledge and experience to make recovery happen for her. And I know you'll benefit from what she has to say. I want to share her success with you and other success stories in the future as well, because you can gain such valuable insights and ideas from others who have ended this issue in their own lives. And it can also help you realize that you're not alone and that you're just as capable of putting this behind you. I shared my own personal story in my first book, Brain Over Binge, but everyone is so different and comes to recovery in their own way, so I think the more voices we have out there, the better. Just to share that message of hope and to share what has worked and not worked and how each person goes about implementing healthy habits and overcoming the harmful ones. Before I play the interview, I want to mention that I was a little under the weather when I recorded this and I still feel like my voice is not 100%, so I'm sorry if I don't sound like I usually do. But my guest has a powerful voice that I hope is going to guide you toward achieving the same freedom that she has achieved. I also want to say that if you're new here and you want more of a background in some of the concepts that we talk about in this episode, you can get my free ebook, The Brain Over Binge Basics, in the show description. And with that, I'll go ahead and play the conversation. Today, I'm happy to welcome Nan Simonson to the show. Nan recovered from bulimia after 50 years, and I know you'll find her story inspiring. She's also a certified health coach. She holds a plant-based nutrition certification, and she's the author of the new book, Aging Powerfully, Accept Your Past and Take Control of Your Future. Welcome to the show, Nan.
Thank you, Katherine. I'm so glad to be here with you.
I'm so glad to have you. I wanted to bring you on the show because I think your recovery is going to give hope to all of the listeners. I also think that you can give them useful ideas that they can use in their own journey to freedom from struggles with food. And you have a lot of wisdom that they can use just in general on their journey of life to help them make the best of their life well into their later years. And I know you had a birthday recently and that this birthday was, in particular, very special to you. And I'd love to start with you telling the audience a little more about that.
Yes. Well, January 9th, I turned 70 years old. And my attitude about that number has always been that once you're there, you're old and you see it around you. People begin counting their deficits rather than their potential. And instead, 6 months before turning 70, I was in such a good place, now going into a decade not being harnessed with an eating disorder, but going into a decade with all this freedom that having gotten past this obsessive and this addictive behavior, it just opened up a whole world for me. And so 6 months before, I thought, okay, when I turn 70, this is going to be such a celebration. I'm going to be 70 and soaring and aging well. And at that time, I thought, you know, I'll write a book. I'll write a book about aging powerfully because I had a couple of years with lifestyle medicine, understanding the value of lifestyle as medicine and food as the potential to be the most important thing that we can do for our health with lifestyle intervention and a lot of other ways, and decided that's what I'll do. And I had the book finished by December 27th. And this year, I'm looking at 70 as being the beginning of another, knock on wood, 20 to 30 years of possibilities. So yes, this was a major step. Aging Powerfully has become my mission behind a movement to help people understand that as we age, and actually at any age, but especially when we're hitting this what I call last quarter, last third of our life as baby boomers, Aging Powerfully is now a movement that I would like to introduce to people to help them see the potential rather than the restrictions of these years.
That's amazing. I think that's such a powerful story to share and a powerful, you know, message to get out there. And especially because eating disorders are thought to be problems of young people. Like a lot of people think of these issues as something that only young people struggle with. And it does start in the teen years more frequently. Like the average age of onset for anorexia is like 16 or 17 and bulimia is maybe 18. So, you know, there is some truth to that. And I think a lot of that is just when people are most likely to begin dieting. Like if you look at it, most people go on their first diet in those teen years. So I just think that people need to know that these problems can linger well into adulthood. They can linger into the 40s, into the 50s and beyond. And the fact that you're raising awareness about that is really important. I think it's very necessary that we give people hope that recovery is still possible, even if you've been struggling with this for a long time. So I want to know what you would say to people who are still struggling with these issues after so many years like you were.
In Aging Powerfully, I couldn't write the book about aging well without explaining some of, I'll say, the background to my eating disorder. But actually, it began at 15, and I'm now 70, and I didn't get a handle on it until I was 67, almost 68. That's a long, long time to be harnessed by something that basically controls your self-esteem and a large part of your life. It was on and off, but it was on most of that time. So you would think that after all these years, it was so deeply entrenched that I wouldn't be able to get past it. And in a way, I almost accepted that. I had years of medication. I had hundreds of sessions of therapy and couldn't get past it until the day I picked up your book. And there were two things that converged, and I'll talk later about the other one. But one was the way that I was choosing to nourish myself. But the most important in terms of getting me past this habitual loop of behavior that I even began thinking, gosh, this has nothing to do with how I'm feeling, happy, sad, tense, relaxed. It's a habit because I would just fall into it. And I read your book and it taught me so much about how we can direct what is coming to us that seems like an imperative that's simply, as you call it, the lower brain wanting to survive with a habitual, let's say, time-honored way of at least getting one past tension or whatever is going on in our life. So I will say to anybody that I'm proof of something I wasn't even sure was possible. And that is, it makes me want to cry thinking about it, because I had given up. And then I read that there were ways around this that had nothing to do with trying to unravel the past and try to rid myself of demons that were, I'll call them, entrenched. It had everything to do with right now, right here. And your methods of understanding what urges were, where they came from, and how we could mitigate their effect on us changed everything. And that happened, I picked up your book in 2018, and well, the rest is history. It took me 3 months before I was able to, and I think we'll talk more about that, before I was able to stop the cycle completely. But in 3 months, as opposed to what I had struggled with for over 50 years. It's a bit of a miracle.
That's amazing. I'm so glad that something I shared in my book could be a part of that. I mean, it's because of you. You did it. You were able to implement it. But I'm glad that I could share a message that resonated with you so deeply and just helped you see that you could take control at any point, regardless of your past. Like, I think a lot of people who struggle for so long think, oh, I'm hopeless, or it's too well ingrained. And the fact that you were able to do that is just amazing. And something I want to dive into is in my book, especially my second book, The Brain Over Binge Recovery Guide, I talk about two goals of recovery: dismissing the urges to binge and eating adequately. And reading your book, Aging Powerfully, it seems like those two goals were very evident in your recovery. And I think talking about that is going to help people. You worked on both of those goals at the same time, like letting go of the urges, responding differently, not acting on those well-ingrained impulses. And then you also worked on the eating adequately and making sure that you nourished your body. And I know you have a lot to share in that area, and we'll get to that in a minute. But in relationship to the urges, I think it would be helpful if you could talk about what it was like to experience ignoring these urges after following them for so long. Like you mentioned, it took like 3 months, and it seems like it was pretty fast compared to, you know, what you had tried before. But what was it like to kind of finally feel separate from those urges and capable of saying no to the binges where you hadn't been able to in the past?
Well, as I was reading Brain Over Binge, and it was a revelation that I could make a decision to ignore what I thought, again, was an imperative. If our mind says something, if it's strong enough, if there's even physical almost reaction to that, I didn't even consider that I wasn't, I'll say, held hostage by those impulses. Your book, and I didn't even have to get through it all, as I was reading, helped me understand that I didn't have to react and gave me the instructions. For example, don't fight it, don't overthink it, simply understand where it's coming from and decide that it was something that I wasn't going to act on. And that concept, say, sunk in right away. I had days of success, moments where I knew I would have been face first in food, but instead walked away from that behavior and went on to other things without having to fight it, without the tension, believing what you said, and it was true, that they would disappear. But then once the glow of that success lost some of its hold on me, I found that in certain circumstances, I was going back to old behavior. But having understood that I could do this kept giving me the impetus to try again, try again, try again. And that's how, not having given up, when I found that, shoot, now I know these things, but in this particular situation, I couldn't get past it. It was disappointing, but it wasn't the all or nothing belief that I either get it now or I don't, because you address all of that. And so instead, it took some time and it took some fits and starts and some disappointments and periods of success. But finally, I realized that as you said, as I gained more success with this, as I gained more, I'll say control, even though it's not a strong arm control, it's a decision. As I gained, though, those memories of overcoming the urge or ignoring the urge, I think that's a better word, it gave me the strength to put one day on top of another, on top of another. And before I knew it, at 3 months, I stopped binging. And it's been something that I've been able to maintain now going on 3 years.
I love that you didn't use the times that you did fall back into the old behaviors as a reason to give up, as a reason to say, oh, well, this just isn't going to work for me. You're like, okay, I had success, but then I didn't. So what happened that I can learn from or I can improve on? If you have success in 80% of the situations and you act on the urges in 20%, it doesn't mean you should just give up and go back to acting on the urges 100% of the time. Like, you work on that 20%. So I think that's really good for people to hear that, you know, you can build on your success and just keep going until it's gone completely. I do want to share something from your book, a few sentences, because I think it's really inspiring. This is from chapter 8. Which was titled The Power of Our Minds. You said, in the end, the urges lost their power to make me respond to them in any way, eventually causing them to disappear or very nearly so. Very rarely, in an intense trigger situation, an urge may crop up, directing me to quell it with food. If that happens, it's now so unusual that I actually speak back to it. Really? Are you kidding? Not on your life or mine, for that matter. And then I ignore it and go about my business. And I just thought that was great. It's just like, you still may hear those voices, you still may have those thoughts every now and then, very rarely, but you just don't take them seriously. And I thought that was just such a great example that no matter how long you've struggled, that you have the ability to take control back. And I don't think that always means it's going to be easy. Like you spoke about how the change was a little more gradual. Could you share maybe a specific challenge that you faced as far as dismissing the urges, maybe a specific situation or just something that you had to work on as far as dismissing urges and then how you were able to overcome that?
Yes, I went through actually the entire span of my binging behavior became so habitual, it was a way to fill voids, any void, a void of time. If there was too much unstructured time, it frightened me. I felt insecure. If I was bored, if I couldn't see anything in a particular period of time that was more something more important to do, something more entertaining, something more fun to do, I would just fall back on food. And so unstructured time became something, even after I stopped binging, that was a little bit testy for me. One of the things that I did that made a huge difference is that I stopped glorifying the binge. It's an ugly, uncomfortable situation when a binge has us by the throat. In other words, maybe there's a little bit of time, oh boy, I get to do this thing, I get to have these foods, but that stops right away when we can't taste anymore, when we can't stop, when we're feeling sick, when we're disgusted, we can't seem to break away until we're just totally worn out. I now hold on to that image so tightly. It's not even now, it was back then when I was able to more strongly hold on to how difficult that really was, how uncomfortable, how unappealing that really was, as opposed to glorifying that binge as, oh boy, oh boy. That picture and then the end result, how it was going to feel afterwards and the reality of how it felt afterwards, and the downward spiral, and the physical discomfort, not just immediately afterwards, but the next day, the memories, the physical, I'll call it destruction, that happens when we fill ourselves with stuff that is not good for us. And then in any way we happen to purge it, we purge it. It leaves us empty on all levels. That's what I hold on to. And that's what I can very easily bring up again. Because I wrote in my book, it doesn't mean that there aren't times where I don't get too full. It's not even about sadness. It's just about not paying attention, standing up and eating, being in a hurry, having had too much. Old little triggers come up like, whoa, I'm too full, or I've had too much of a thing that used to be a trigger. Now, there's not even a thought of turning it into a full-on binge, whereas it used to be, you've gone this far, keep going. Now it's the brakes go on, or I just become aware of what I'll say people without eating disorders or food addictions don't even think of. They just kind of think, you know, I'm really stuffed, the way they feel at Thanksgiving, and then it has no other consequence to them. Well, now it has no other consequence other than, okay, got a little full, walk away, this happens, that's the end of it. So those mechanisms are what I have in place that make a difference. And you said this in your book. You said, I will never go back. I'm paraphrasing. And people say, I've had therapists say, and the talk of the addiction recovery programs in some cases, you are never not a addict. I'm going to choose, you feel this way, Jack Trempe feels this way, that our behavior can fall from an addictive behavior that will never come back if we have enough tools. And again, dismissing urges for me is a tool. And your book is a tool. If we have those tools, we can then make these decisions and understand that we're not owned by the impulses and the compulsion.
Yeah, all of that is so true. It's that you feel like you get your power back over the addictive process. And, you know, I think something that was amazing to me is that you feel like you don't want it anymore at all. Like that, I think that some of the addiction recovery language makes you feel like you're always going to kind of want this. But when you really think, like you said, of the real results of the binges, you know, your lower brain, that primal addictive part of your brain, will remind you of all of the pleasure, you know, for a while until the habit's deconditioned. But when you actively remember what it actually gave you in your life and the consequences, and that desire for it just completely goes away. And there's just no need to, you know, maintain anything or to try to fight to keep it at a distance, because it's just gone and you don't want it in your life anymore. And, you know, has that been your experience as well?
Absolutely. It has no draw in any way. And it's so freeing.
Definitely. And I really liked how you could also have moments of imperfect eating where you're just eating in a way that's not perfect, or that's not the way you want to be eating that in that moment. But then you can just leave it at that and not say, oh, because I did this, then I should binge, or that warrants a binge. I think that that is very, very important, when you can ignore those thoughts that say that imperfect eating means that you should just abandon all control and go ahead and enter into that harmful behavior. So I want to move on to talking about the second recovery goal in the brain over binge approach, which is eating adequately. And I want to say that if anyone's read my book or listened to my podcast, I don't promote one specific way of eating, because I believe everyone is so different and has a different physiological makeup and different preferences. And I've had guests on the show who I know subscribe to more like paleo style eating habits or vegetarian eating habits or intuitive eating and just, you know, an everything in moderation approach. And there's so many different ways to eat. And it's up to you, the listener, and your health professional to decide what's right for you. But Nan, I know that you personally saw a major improvement when you switched to a whole foods, plant-based diet. And this really helped you work on nourishing your body and helped you feel really satisfied with what you were eating. And how do you think this helped you, like this eating change helped you as far as your bulimia recovery?
For my entire life, because it became very popular back in the 60s and 70s to shun carbohydrates, I believed that carbohydrates were bad, refined or whole. There was no distinction. It was just carbohydrates. And so I've always restricted in that way. And what happened when I began eating a whole food plant-based diet is that the carbohydrates, your whole foods, the legumes and grains and tubers, are your carbohydrates. They're also your protein sources, or some of your protein sources, even though all vegetables have protein. So by the nature of eating a diet with no animal products, I was eating whole foods and a starch base. In my case, it's probably 65 to 70% of carbohydrates in my diet. Those are comfort foods. And I, without questioning them, I ate to fullness. I ate to satisfaction. The fiber kept me full. It was so satisfying. And there's something I've come to learn since then, and it's a subject that I think most of your readers have heard about, and that is the microbiome. Being in lifestyle medicine, I do a lot of study with nutrition. And the microbiome, which is our seat of the, I'll call it, creation of 70 to 80% of our neurotransmitters, the feel-good serotonin, dopamine transmitters that reach the brain and kind of calm us down. The microbiome is fed by one thing. It's fed by fiber. Fiber only comes from plant-based foods, the starches, the vegetables, and the fruits. So I lost my fear of those foods. I gained the nutritional value of, again, feeding my microbiome every time I ate, but also enjoying, like just embracing the comfort of eating a lot of food that was nutritionally rich, that actually healed my body in a number of ways, because I'll call it starches. Starches in general, and whole food starches are the ones I'm talking about, are sort of nature's antidepressants. And so through these years of being plant-based, I can't even remember back to how bad it was as I fought the cycles of anxiety and depression because I am so balanced now. I'm nutritionally balanced. I feel better at 70 than I did at 60 or 50, partially because I was binging, but partially just because my body is in great shape. Weight-wise, I don't even think about it. I don't weigh, I don't measure, I don't think about it. And that's new for me. My entire life, I weighed myself every day and sometimes a couple of times a day, but I've settled in at a weight that's really comfortable. If anything, I have to sometimes pile on a little bit more of the nuts and seeds because it's so easy to be full on a plant-based diet. So to me, a whole food plant-based diet means that I have nourishment, I'm feeding every cell of my body, but I'll leave it at the most important thing. I love the food. I love to sit down to a baked potato with broccoli and a vegan cheese sauce. I love eating an apple or two and thinking nothing of, oh no, there's sugar, there's carbs. And the flavors, when I'm not eating processed foods because I stay away from processed foods, the flavors are so intense in fruits and vegetables and grains and legumes that nothing else would taste as good. Fortunately, my husband went along with me when I decided to go whole food plant-based at the end of 2018, and he and I relish our meals. We say it all the time. We'll say, what could be better than this as we're eating these gloriously beautiful, colorful meals? So I sound like I just did a commercial for somebody's company, but I'll just leave it at, you know, I'll just leave it at that.
I think it's wonderful that you found a way that works for you and that you love to eat that way. I think people think, okay, there's one way I should do it, or they try to follow someone else's advice. And like, yeah, you know a lot about nutrition. You are eating, you know, in a way that you believe is the healthiest for you, but you also really enjoy it. And I think that's helpful. You know, there could be someone out there who does not enjoy eating that way, but they can find something else that they enjoy and that also works for them from a health perspective. So I think that's great. I want to read another little part of your book regarding the benefits you experienced when you started this way of eating and just about feeding your body and giving yourself enough nourishment. You said, unexpectedly and without trying, I went from feast, usually a binge, or famine, restrictive eating patterns, to deep and nurturing satisfaction with every meal. I love that phrase, deep and nurturing satisfaction, because I think sometimes people think when they give up binge eating, they're going to have to give up all enjoyment of food. Like they think, I'm never going to be able to find pleasure in my food anymore. But that's not the case at all. It seems like you very much enjoy what you eat. And I enjoy eating as well. And it's not something you give up when you stop binging. You actually get real nourishment and satisfaction and true enjoyment instead of that temporary primal pleasure that just ends up in pain. So can you explain a little about how choosing this lifestyle and this way of eating that works for you and promotes your health, how does that feel very different to like dieting and restricting in the name of weight loss?
A lot of rules have been abandoned. During my binging time, there were so many things that I placed restrictions on. And so the only way to get past those restrictions was to binge and get it all in while I could, because I was going to have to go back to restrictions. I saw food as an enemy. I feared food. I feared my behavior around food. Not being in that space anymore is so, it's such a comfort to look at food now as something that nourishes my body, something I enjoy very much, but something I don't fear anymore. Everybody, as you said, has their preference as to how they want to move forward with in good health. And in my case, with the whole food plant-based, I enjoy the food so much that I don't feel that there's anything that I have to do that I would want to do instead, like breaking free so I can have something I otherwise wouldn't have, because I can have anything I want. And I don't restrict myself in that way. I just make choices as to what I believe falls into my vision of health, ongoing health. If I'm going to last another 20 or 30 years, again, knock on wood, I need to do it in such a way that my body is nourished with the things that I eat. And that makes it easier to stay away from, in my case, processed foods, because they're not real. They're not food that feeds the microbiome or our body. And they're addictive because they're meant to be. I came to understand that, and I came to believe, not because somebody told me, but because it's true, that the processed foods can really get us in trouble because they were created to make us not be able to stop eating them. I'll leave it at that, but I do believe that that's one of the most important tenets that one can adopt regardless of how we take in the rest of our nourishment, and that is that it's helpful to stay away from things that just suck us in, like the foods that are made to keep us eating them.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I would maybe add that, you know, they make us want to keep eating them. It doesn't mean we're destined to. It doesn't mean we're destined to binge. But, you know, why would you want to put yourself in that situation where you're kind of always having those cravings that are abnormal because of the processed foods? And, you know, it is just something to think about. And everyone is different. And some people need to really get the message that it is okay to have everything. It is okay to learn to eat everything in moderation and realize that you do have that control. But I think also as you get older, you realize how important it is to nourish yourself well, to keep yourself healthy. And that's a lot of what's in your book. And when we're talking to younger people, the message of, okay, like, don't diet, don't restrict, it's okay to eat everything in moderation, like, that's really important. And not that it's not important in older people, but what I'm trying to say is that I do think there can be a way that these ideas of, okay, eat everything in moderation can merge with, you need to take care of yourself. You need to give yourself the best chance at having a good life in your later years. And you can do both. Like, I think that you're not restricting in a way that you don't feel like restricted. You feel like you're truly enjoying your food. So, you know, there's a way to put these ideas together. Is that kind of making sense?
Yes. And I'm glad you put it that way, because it's not an either or. It's a finding our own path and finding our own way, but understanding. I'm going to use the word consequences, even though that seems like a judgment, but there are consequences for our decisions. And everybody makes decisions in a lot of areas of our lives based on consequences. Well, with food, it's the same way. We can look at certain things and say, I don't want the consequence of that. I'd rather eat an apple than an apple fritter because of the consequences, and those consequences are varied.
Yeah, and realizing that you absolutely can have those things. You do have the freedom. They're not forbidden. But over time, I think you just want to choose them less and less because you do see those consequences. So I appreciate that. And I kind of want to talk about the aging piece of this and getting older, and, you know, you're wanting to live your best life. And I think it's super inspiring to, you know, want to be healthy and vibrant in your later years. I've been thinking about the aging thing lately too. I'm going to turn 40 this year, and I know that's not super old, but it still feels, you know, different compared to being in your 20s and 30s. And it seems like in our culture, especially women, and I know men too, but we go from being told that, like, we need to be a certain weight and look a certain way and have this certain body, to then being told, okay, now you have to prevent yourself from getting older. Now you have to do all these things. You know, it's a booming industry. And I think that, you know, for some people, this can go from one obsession to the other, like from a weight obsession to a aging obsession. And I just don't think that's healthy, or sometimes it can be both. I really like how your book takes a different approach and helps people see, like, aging is not something we have to fight, we have to prevent, but to embrace it instead and to find your sense of purpose in your later years and to create vibrant health as well. And I'd love for you to talk to the audience a little about this and about accepting the aging process and not becoming, you know, obsessed with not aging, like, you know, you can become obsessed with your weight. So, you know, just maybe talk about how to make the most of the aging process.
Okay, well, thank you for that. I think the title of my book says it all as it relates to my attitude about aging. We can make the decision and embrace that decision to age powerfully at any age. We're all going to get older. We are going to, you know, we're time stamped in terms of, you know, the human species, but we can decide how we're going to do it. I look around me, and being in the medical field, I see people who have given up on, I'm going to say, on the responsibility we have in our own health and in our own longevity. We can, if we decide, I'm going to age powerfully, make decisions in everything we do, in how we move, in how we sleep, in the connectedness we have with others, all of these that I'm relating are lifestyle choices, in our nourishment. If we get excited about those things, instead of fearing getting older, we can see our purpose ahead of us outside of the realm of having to be a certain way as we get older, as it relates to the way others view us, but in satisfying ourselves with purpose in terms of what it means to go through these years well enough, healthy enough, strong enough, settled enough to feel the vibrancy in life and balance and joyfulness that comes from being excited about aging powerfully, deciding that these years ahead, I have a lasso around them. I'm going to make things happen. I'm not fearing this new wrinkle. I mean, I look at my skin. It's not the skin of a 40-year-old, even though I'm trim and I'm fit. It's just not the same skin. And it's okay. It's just part of what happens as we get old and certain things happen, and I can spend my days worrying about it and fighting it. But instead, I'd rather embrace where I can go with my mission and my excitement about what's going to happen during these next 20 to 30 years. It's a whole lifetime. If I were 80, I'd have a potential 10 to 20 years. If I was 40, I have a potential 60 years ahead of me. That is exciting. That's what aging powerfully means. And that's my simple but long-winded answer to what you just asked me.
That's inspiring, just to focus on your own purpose, your own joy, your own excitement, and your mission, and not dwell on how others see you or how you think, you know, you should be. When you're younger, I think it is easier to focus on like how the world sees you and kind of try to fit in. And I think you gradually let go of that. And I think that you in particular, you know, you've purposefully made a lot of these changes to sort of bring it to the next level. And I think that's just great. And I think the listeners will find it very helpful. I really appreciate you being here to share your ideas. I think this is a good time to wrap up the conversation, but I'd also love for the audience to know how they can learn more about you and your book as well.
Okay. Aging Powerfully is on Amazon, and I would love people to read it, and I'd love to hear what you think. My website, and I can be communicated with through my website, is nansimmonson.com. And I am on Facebook and Instagram under Aging Powerfully with Nan. And I have a YouTube channel. Because the book is not a directive. In other words, I talk about your book, Catherine, but I say to them in the book, I cannot give you the information for recovery in this book. That was never my intent. Read Catherine's book. Throughout my book, I refer people to other books to get the big picture on things that I recommend or that I point to. Well, the same thing with my book. It's not a cookbook, even though I do cooking classes and have done them for years at the lifestyle medical general practice that I work with. I love to cook, and if you have enough great food, you're going to love any way of eating. It's not a cookbook, so there's no recipes in it. But in my YouTube cooking show, I have recipes that I'm now putting in, at least 1 to 2 new recipes every week. And during the cooking shows, I talk about nutrition. So under YouTube, I'm Nan Simmonson. And my email address is nan@agingpowerfully.com. That's how you can find me.
Okay, great. And I'll put links to all of that in the show notes so you can just check that out. And I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your story. And I'm so glad that my book was a part of your journey. And it means a lot to me to know that it helped you so much and that you're going on to help others and do such amazing work in the world.
Thank you. And thank you for everything you've done and your contribution. I honestly don't know where I'd be, even with my whole food plant-based. I don't know that I would have known I didn't have to live the way I was living if it hadn't been for your book. So thank you.
I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Nan. I feel so fortunate that I get to talk to so many wonderful people who found a spark of inspiration from my book and then combine that with other ideas and information to just create their own unique path to recovery. If you feel like you need more detailed guidance and answers to your questions as you end your own binge eating habit, you can subscribe to the Brain Over Binge course for only $10.99 per month. And the course now includes an app, which makes following the course just as easy as listening to a podcast. You can learn more at brainoverbinge.com/subscribe. Thank you so much for joining me today. And again, I want to thank Nan for such a helpful conversation. I also want to encourage you and remind you that you have the power to change your brain and live a binge-free life. The Brain Over Binge podcast is produced and recorded by Brain Over Binge Recovery Coaching, LLC. All work is copyrighted by Brain Over Binge Recovery Coaching, LLC, and all rights are reserved. As a disclaimer, the hosts of the Brain Over Binge podcast are not professional counselors or licensed healthcare providers, and this podcast is not a substitute for medical advice or any form of professional therapy. Eating disorders can have serious health consequences, and you are strongly advised to seek medical attention for matters relating to your health. Please get help when you need it, and good luck on your journey.